broadcasting from inside the Jim Butler Ballroom of the beautiful Mitzvah Hotel. KFAB and Twyla's Pack and Tack Shop is proud to present Drive Time Tonopah with your host, Faye and Brenda.
I'm the Faye driver.
And I'm Brenda Boo.
And thanks for joining us on KFAB Radio. You're listening to Drive Time Tonopah. Hey, Brenda.
Hey, Faye.
It's been a long time since we did one of these Drive Time Tonopahs.
Mm-hmm. You can't seem to get yourself back to the Jim Butler studio for some reason. What's up with that?
Yes, well, we can discuss my issues maybe later.
Oh, we will.
Yes. Well, you know, actually, I'm wondering how long it's been since we started Drive Time Tonopah. I get the sense it's about a year, but maybe it's less than a year.
It would have been shortly after Pride 48, so that would have been September. I think I started bugging you about this probably about a year ago.
Yeah. So we've been doing this for a year. I bring that up because I think that we probably have a few new listeners out in the world, and I wanted to talk about how Drive Time Tonopah came to be so that new people who might be joining us would understand what the hell is Drive Time Tonopah.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess I should say this occurred, the 2012 edition of Pride 48 in Las Vegas was one of the events that I went to. And I actually drove down to Vegas and was there for Pride 48. And then I drove back home to Vancouver. And one of the towns that I drove through was a town called Tonopah. Mm-hmm. And it just struck me as a quaint little town. Well, I grew up in many towns like this in my youth.
But you didn't live in a desert, per se.
No, not exactly. Mm-hmm. But I did experience many small towns. There was one main street, and basically everything in that town was on the main street, and there was a little school and a couple of churches and whatever, you know, just a very small town.
Mm-hmm.
So this town struck me as the any place town of America, right? Small town.
Well, it should be said that when you left Las Vegas, you left in the wee hours of the morning, so you went to bed really late that night, too. How many hours of sleep did you get before you started driving back to pick up Mr. Anderson?
Well, it was about maybe 4 hours, I think I slept, if that, somewhere in that area.
So how far along in the drive were you when you hit Tonopah?
Tonopah was about 3 or 4 hours into the drive.
And you had how many more hours to get to where Mr. Anderson was vacationing at?
Probably another 5, I think, or 8. That was a long day. Maybe it was an 11-hour day, I think.
So you've been driving a while, you are on very little sleep, and you decided, hey, let's do some recording.
Yeah, well, you know, people need to go back and listen to the Pink Wheel Nuts Garage episode number 161 on October 6th of 2012, which was when it was posted. And if they listen to that, and I imagine you might have heard a little bit of that already, or you are about to hear a little bit of that episode.
Mm-hmm.
But that episode will explain Drive Time Tonopah much better than I'm doing here.
Well, Pinkies, this is the Faye driver. We are leaving Las Vegas. That old cliche, leaving Las Vegas. And I must say, I am a little sad, just a little sad to be leaving all those people behind. I met a lot of really wonderful people in Las Vegas this time, and I had a really fantastic time. And it's nice to know that there's someone out there pulling for you. God damn it, you guys are making me cry. I gotta blow my nose into a McDonald's napkin. And I'm pulling for you too, but it was really great to be around a bunch of people who you really feel like they got your back. You know, I really feel like a lot of people I met today are on my side. And we need to do that for each other. So, it was a wonderful experience, Pride 48. Thank you. Well, there you go, Brenda Boo. You made me cry. Are you happy now? I got makeup running down my face, Brenda Boo. I actually cried for you for 60 to 90 seconds. Oh, you Goombas. You're all just Goombas, you Pride 48 listeners, podcasters. Well, so I'm out here in the desert driving this car. Oh, I just had a thought.
In any case, so after that all occurred, Brenda Boo approached me and wanted to do a show, and we came up with the bit called Drive Time to NOPA.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just kind of a fun thing. We thought we might pretend to be the radio station in the little city of Tonopah. You know, we did ads for a little while, which got to be too time consuming.
Well, it's not that, Faye. It's just that a lot of our sponsors have pulled their advertising dollars because we're just not reaching the amount of people that they thought. I mean,
right. We're
sitting here in the Jim Butler studio at the Mitzpah Hotel right now.
Right, yeah.
This is KFAB radio. I mean, this is all above board legitimate. This isn't
Absolutely. Pretend.
What are you talking about?
You're right. And we should thank Twyla's Pack and Tack Shop as well.
She is our longest and most dedicated sponsor. She has really kept the station going.
She has.
Mm-hmm.
In any case, so, you know, Drive Time to NOPA sort of became this show where Brenda and I just get together at the Mitzpah Hotel and we chat about whatever is on our minds.
Mm-hmm. Mostly I like to get Faye to admit to things that he would never, ever talk about on his own show, Pink Wheel Nuts.
Right. Right. Mm-hmm. And I try to make you cry.
You're successful at it, I tell you what. Goal completed. Excellent. You get an A+ for that.
Thank you. So, is there anything else you want to say? You want to talk about the...
Well, we should talk about why we pronounce it Tonopah and not the actual pronunciation, which would be what, Faye?
Tonopah.
Tonopah. And how did we find out that the name was actually Tonopah and not Tonopah? Do you remember?
Well, I called it Tonopah because I was just a dumb Canadian and, you know, I never spoke to anybody in Tonopah, and I saw the sign and thought, what's the name of this town? Tonopah.
Uh-huh.
But I guess we found out that the proper name from this, there's actually a YouTube video out there all about the little town of Tonopah,
mm-hmm.
Nevada. So
yeah, I'm going to play that little clip, and I'll put it right here.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of Town Tours. Today, we're heading south to north on Highway 95 to a town that was once known as the Queen of the Silver Camps, Tonopah, Nevada. Tonopah is 202 miles north of Las Vegas and 240 miles south of Reno. Tonopah is the largest town in central Nevada, which means there is a lot to do here.
Now, Faye, did you just hear what he said, that Tonopah or Tonopah was the biggest city in the middle of Nevada, and there is a lot to do? And I checked out the population of Tonopah. Guess
right.
how many people that was?
I would say 800, but...
No, it's 2,400.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. You know, and when we were first doing the show, I was doing advertisements, and one of the businesses there was the Clown Hotel. Do you remember that?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
There were so many interesting business names. It's like every kitschy, goofy person in the world is an entrepreneur in Tonopah, too. You know, they started up there like Twyla's Pack and Tack. I can't even remember what Pack and Tack means. Do you?
It's got to be fishing and hunting, right?
I'm sure. Now, rather than sit and listen to Faye and I try to blindly decide what pack and tack is, as I was editing, I decided to give you a definitive answer. I consulted the internet and my husband. Turns out, pack and tack is in reference to the supplies a person might need if they were going to go horseback riding. So the pack part is something that the human might need. That could be a saddle, any supplies that need to go along with riding a horse, food, things like that. And the tack part is the stuff that is directly related to the horse itself and the supplies you might need. So, you know, horses have bits and they have horse blankets and they have things to trim up their hooves. So that's what it is. It's all the supplies a person might need if they're in Tonopah and they want to ride a horse around the desert. So there you go.
I don't know.
I'm not sure. But then we, after we started doing Drive Time Tonopah, then their most famous citizen died, the Cat Man. We did a story about him.
Poor guy.
Yeah. He did all these body modifications to become his spirit animal as a cat.
Right. That's a little brief reminder of how Drive Time Tonopah came to be. Mm-hmm. So I guess we should get on with the show, Brenda, and get into our first topic.
Mm-hmm.
I think we better go have a peek into the psych ward.
Come, take a peek into the psych ward.
Okay, Brenda. Now, I want us to turn our attention to a Twitter message that you sent out that had a picture attached to it. Mm-hmm. And you said in your tweet, "These shadows in my room were taken within seconds of each other. Do you see the hooded figure and the X-ray skull?" And then there's a picture of two black blobs. And listeners can look at the show art for this episode, and you can see Brenda's two shots of a hooded figure and the X-ray skull.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the top picture should look like maybe a skeleton man with a hoodie on, and then the one on the bottom kind of looks like Frankenstein's X-ray to me.
Mm-hmm.
And when you looked at it, you saw what?
Two black blobs.
Two black blobs.
Well, I should say gray and black blobs, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Could somewhat see your skull, fellow.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't see the other things. But the thing that occurred to me when you put that out was I was concerned for the darkness of, like, the sinister images that you drew out of these shadows on the wall. Being a hooded figure and a skull. Like, these are not pleasant. Skulls evoke death and dying to me.
Well, I have to admit that I am kind of attracted to the dark side of life sometimes. In the 90s, I was really obsessed with all these true crime TV shows. Right now, I have a magazine on my table that has, it's like a special people that's got the country's most sinister murderers in the last decade.
Oh, my goodness me. Yeah, I see. You go hunting for this stuff.
I used to a lot more than I do now. I think it was because, and I'm not alone, there's something in the female psyche that seems to be drawn to this dark side because I think it's so unimaginable to females, mostly. You know, when me and Eric first started dating, like, if he would take a route that seemed way off the beaten path, because that's how he drives, he tends to not want to take the same route. And if we were out kind of in the country, I'd be like, Are you taking me out here to kill me and bury me in a shallow grave?
Right.
Just things like that would cross my mind.
It just concerns me that why can't you see kitties and puppy cats in your shadows?
But I do love kitties and you know, puppy dogs, puppy cats. What are these puppy cats you speak of? I mean, I will tweet pictures of cuteness all the time. I'm attracted to cuteness.
Yeah.
I don't know, Faye.
You know, Mr. Anderson is this way, too. Mm-hmm. He has a tendency to interpret things in a negative manner, was what I would say. He interprets things in the light of how they might get him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's always seemed to be preoccupied with something that might be bad that might happen to him.
I don't think like that, though. I don't think that there's danger around every corner. I'm kind of oblivious in some ways.
Mm-hmm.
I really don't assume that there's somebody out there that's trying to hurt me.
Right. What about when you're just walking down the street and, like, do you notice? Are you suspicious of people?
Generally speaking, no. It depends on what time of day it is.
Oh, yeah, sure.
But, you know, I'll go around for a walk in my neighborhood after dark.
Mm-hmm.
I just always assume, like, if I see somebody, I just assume they're just getting from one place to another. I don't necessarily think that they're after something.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
I'm a little bad for that because I'm suspicious of everybody.
So why are you dogging me?
Not that I think they're going to, like, hurt me or go after me or anything, but I'm just like, all right, what are you up to? I'm always kind of watching people and assuming or looking for whether or not they are they doing something shady? Are you following me? What's your deal? You know, that kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm. See, that must be part of the reason why you ended up with, like, Mr. Anderson, because he is probably one of the least shady figures I've ever met in my life. I mean, he's pretty transparent with his honesty and his...
Right.
His intentions and everything.
Yeah, you can't tell him a secret, by the way.
Oh, no.
Yeah, not at all.
What will happen?
Everybody will find out about it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, maybe not everybody, but mm-hmm. There's a limited expectation that your secret will be kept.
Mm-hmm. See, I always feel like I want to give everybody the benefit of the doubt. I feel like that experiences in my past will sometimes make that part of my brain overstimulated when something happens that I think that might be some kind of rejection, and then my head starts swishing and swirling with all these other past things that have happened, and, oh, this is just like this when this happened, and then I'm like, God, Brendan, now you're being stupid. You should have seen this coming. I'm more afraid of emotional attacks than physical scary attacks.
Oh, yeah. Interesting.
But you don't allow yourself to be emotionally vulnerable so much.
Yeah, not really. I don't think I'm a very emotional person to begin with, so I'm not afraid of emotional attacks.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, you had said to me something about, why are you so emotional? This is an ongoing puzzle you have with me.
Right.
And I think that it's just the way my brain is wired, because I've always been a bit of a crybaby ever since I was a little kid. I've always reacted very strongly. My feelings get hurt very easily. So I think that there's something in my brain that has some kind of connections with dopamine or whatever makes us happy that is different from, like, someone like yourself. Like, because, like, depression is just runs wild in my family.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have anything like that that goes through your family?
Yeah, not that I'm aware of. Like, it's not a family, historical family issue.
Mm-hmm.
Although, I am concerned that I can be depressed as well. I think some parts of my life I've spent in depression. Now, being more mature and looking back on my life, I can see times when I think that that's sort of the clinical definition of depression. It was what I was experiencing.
Were you sleeping a lot?
I think just closing people out and not wanting to make commitments to things. It was easier to hide away and stay away from people.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of the inability to start or complete a project, that kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
I experienced that for a little while. And I think looking back on that now, that was during a period of time when I was having some difficult times in my life. And I would say that that's depression. I sort of look for that. I'm always checking to see, am I depressed right now? Is that what's going on? Why I'm not feeling super happy? I'm always testing my own water, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. To me, it seems like you keep yourself at a baseline busy. And then when added responsibilities come up and commitments, that takes you up to another level of busy, and then you can become easily overwhelmed at that point because you bear a lot of responsibility in your house and you take on a lot of things yourself. Would you say that's true?
Yeah, I think that could be an accurate assessment, possibly. I wouldn't dispute that, no.
Okay, well, if you could just sign here for the lawyers and we'll get this paperwork done, sir.
Right. Yeah, no, you're right. I do. I do take on a lot, and I do get frustrated. Yes, I get frustrated sometimes too easily. You're right.
Mm-hmm.
And you're right, and I recognize it's because I have high expectations that I should be able to get many things accomplished, or I get frustrated when I feel like nobody's helping me.
Right. My tendency has been in the past to not expect enough from me or expect too much from myself because I would get overwhelmed really easily. And I notice now with working for myself that I'm able to take on more stuff and I'm busier than I used to be because I feel like I have more control over my day-to-day life. It's cut up into smaller chunks, you know, like I have a job in the morning. That's usually 3 hours and then I know I get a break and then I don't have to go back there, go someplace else. And then I can maybe sneak a swim in there. Then maybe I'm going to go to the grocery store. I felt like before when I was having a regular job, if I was just going and being someplace for 9 hours, that's all I wanted to have to deal with was that 9-hour chunk. And then I would come home and I'd be just like, oh, I can't. I just want to do what I want to do now. Please leave me alone.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Feel a lot more motivated and I feel happier for the most part now than I did when we first encountered each other. Do you see any changes in me?
Yeah, absolutely I do. Without a doubt, are a much happier person right now than you were when I first met you. And in fact, you even mentioned it on your recent episode you did with Wendy.
Mm-hmm.
From Cocktails and Cream Puffs. You said you didn't know who I was, and this jackass emailed you and said, I talked about you on my show, and I was mad at you.
I knew who you were.
You know, and I was giving you a hard time for not wanting to go to work.
Listen here, Missy. I was surprised because I was like, why is he so mad at me? I don't understand.
So, yeah, absolutely. You're a much happier person now than you were way back then.
Mm-hmm.
And I can tell. I know. I know you are. And I'm so happy to hear that you're happy.
Well, you know, I'll confess. I'll make a confession to you, Faye, here. This will be my one vulnerable moment of the show.
Okay.
You're not going to make me cry, though.
All right.
So, you know, last night we were supposed to record, and there was a lot of hemming and hawing, and then we ended up canceling. And my instinct was, like, to go into this kind of phase, tired of me, he doesn't want to be friends with me anymore. You know, it was just like, all these racing thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
And then I woke up this morning, and I still was kind of in a funk, and I was feeling weird, and I was just kind of observing these thoughts, going, Brenda, please calm down. Believe what he says and take him for his word, because that's what a lot of my neurosis comes from, is that I don't believe people.
Right.
So in my mind, when you say, Brenda, I'm busy, it's not that I take it for the face value of Brenda, I'm busy. It's Brenda.
Brenda, I don't want to tell you that I'm not interested.
Right.
Right.
So I thought, all right, now what can I do to get rid of this feeling? Okay, well, I'll go to my job and I'll sneak a swim in between my two jobs, which I did. And I kicked some major ass in that water. I was booking. And I could really feel like the surge of hormones that was going through me. I think that's what started it. And when I got done, I felt calmer and just felt like proud of myself for being proactive and not indulging in this kind of self-destructive thought pattern.
Good for you, Brenda.
Yeah.
That makes me very proud. I saw that. I saw that moment in our communications with each other where you decided that, oh, it's done. He doesn't love me anymore. And I just going, Brenda, God damn it!
Everything's a learning experience, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, you know, you had made a suggestion in our notes, and I think it's a very interesting theory, because a lot of this insecurity comes back to my parents. I can tell you that I loved my mom. I clung to her apron, you know, basically. I was one of those little kids. And I can remember being very young and her just like, please stop. Mm. And my dad has never been huggy, kissy, nothing. Mm-hmm. So you had a suggestion on how I could repair this relationship with my parents. And I would like you to explain it to everybody.
Yeah. My supposition is this. I think that you get stuck in one or two of the five stages of grief. And you rattle around in that stage. So before I get to my thesis on the Brenda, on Brenda versus the parents, let's just discuss the five stages of grief, which are denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and then acceptance. And this is what I think happens to you is something bad happens, like Faye says, oh, I can't record tonight, I'm too busy. And you get into probably either the bargaining or the depression stage where you're saying, oh, he doesn't want to do this because he doesn't like me anymore. He doesn't want to be my friend or whatever. And and I think you get hung up there. And I think what you, in relation to your parents, what I think you need to do is you need to hypothetically kill your parents and work properly through the five stages of grief. And then when you've done that, when you've accepted that your parents are no longer the people that you remember from your childhood life, then you need to reintroduce yourself to them and create a new relationship.
I can see the validity in that, because most people have to go through a transition with their parents, whether it's healthy or not healthy, where they stop being the child and as a, like, truly a child and dependent, and being an autonomous child of the same people. Is that what you're getting at?
Yeah, absolutely.
I concur with you on that. I believe I have attempted that in the past, because I can remember when Eric and I first got married, I was still very much wanting and clinging to the idea that somehow that they were ultimately responsible for my life. And I felt like I owed them a lot. I would call them, you know, like when my car caught on fire at 5 o'clock in the morning, after we called the fire department and I was watching it burn, I called my mom in Iowa, you know, which was real early for them. We were in North Carolina. She's like, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm standing here watching my car burn. And of course, you know, my mom and dad's attitude is like, I can't do anything about it. You know, deal with it and tell me about it afterwards.
Right.
So I think there was some point, you know, since I've been married, that I did want them to start thinking of me as a grown person. And I would invite them to come to my house, let's say, you know, like we don't always have to go to their house. I would invite them up here. And my mom just resisted it. She was very uncomfortable. She didn't want to come here to eat. You know, I owed him money for a while. And I said, well, let me you know, I'm having a hard time paying it off. Let me clean your house and I'll try to work it off. And they wouldn't let me do that. It's just so much resistance from them.
Right. And you know, another one of the aspects about this killing your parents off idea is also, I think you need to recognize that they're not the same people that they were when you were a child or a teenager either.
Mm-hmm.
And they have hopefully matured, and you know, I would hope that they would realize they didn't treat you as well as they could have treated a daughter, but I wouldn't put too much hope in that. But you know, I think they're different people, and I think you need to tuck away those parents that you knew growing up and stuff them away in a box. I have the perfect size box for you, Brenda.
You have a lot of boxes.
One of Faye's special boxes where you can wrap up your family and stuff them in this box, and or put them in a dark, a dark, dingy closet somewhere, and then start over.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you this then. It's always been, the relationship has always been me contacting them, me instigating coming to see them, same way with my sister, the one I'm close to. And the last year or so, I've kind of pulled back just for a lot of reasons, and they have never picked up that slack. And when I do call them, I find like, well, I guess I better call them. They're not going to call me. They have this attitude like, oh, well, look who dropped out of the sky. You know, it's just like, oh, you can call me too, you know.
Right.
It's both ways. So I feel like I'm happy.
It's a one-way street.
Very much so.
Then why bother? Like, that, you know, I've been dealing with this with my brothers. Like, I've had the same situation. Not entirely true, because they will phone me on my birthday, which is a very nice thing that they do. But I still feel it's like an obligatory phone call.
Mm-hmm.
I don't feel like my family reaches out to me either, so I understand this. But, you know, at one point in my life, I decided, well, I don't really need them to reach out to me. I'm not going to reach out to them. I'm not going to be sad about losing their connection with them.
Mm-hmm.
What if you never phoned them again, and what if they never contacted you? What would that be like?
My one sister, it would bother me, but the rest of them, probably not so much.
Is that an option? Can you ever see that happening where you just don't make any effort?
Well, me and my brother don't see or talk to each other unless it's with everybody else there. We don't contact or call each other. We've had this agreement for years and years. It's fine.
Hmm. You both agreed.
You both this. Agreed to, like, eh, I don't give a shit what you're up to. And
good for you. I think I'm not too sure about this, but anyway, we'll talk about that in another episode of Drive Time to Nopa.
You know, I kind of feel like when I was younger, I probably started pulling away from my family a long time ago, and I was perfectly willing to find a substitute tribe.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, not to get too hung up about my marriage, but, you know, Eric just does his own goddamn thing. He is, you know, just like his dad. His dad does his job, and he has his interests, and, you know, if he comes home and I'm here, he likes it, and he really wants me to be here, but I've never felt like he and I were on the same team. And that's what I've always wanted. I've wanted to find a team, because I never felt like I was on my family's team. I don't need to be the head of that team necessarily. I want to be a member of it. And that's what makes me sad. That's why friendships are so important to me, because I feel like, oh, here's my posse. Here's my team. I've got them. I mean, does that make sense to you?
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. Yeah. I don't know how that relates to me, but I think that would be wonderful if you had a team. And I sort of have the same reaction with Mr. Anderson as well. But I think I'm the Eric in this relationship, because I just do whatever, and sometimes I force him to tag along.
Mm-hmm.
But he tends to do his own thing, too. Like, he's wrapped up right now in learning calculus.
Calculus? Oh, wow. Yeah.
That's his next goal in life, is to learn calculus. Mm-hmm. So he is totally involved and enveloped in calculus right now.
Mm-hmm. When you said you didn't know what that had to do with you, what do you mean?
I mean, I don't know how I would have to think about how I would relate to wanting or having a team, or to be in a team.
See, I want you to be part of my posse.
Yeah. I can see that.
Yeah. Like all the Lotzel guys are, I want you there.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. Because I had this idea when I got married, I was going to be making decisions that were based on two people's opinions, not one person making decisions and then coming home and then telling you about them and then going, okay. You know,
right.
And there was a point in our marriage when I was kind of more like Mr. Anderson. I mean, way more than the last couple of years. I mean, let's say 7 years ago, where I was like, I'm tired of staying home by myself all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly, me sitting around waiting here is nothing's going to change. I need to do some stuff for myself. And it caused some friction because, you know, he was used to having me just kind of slinking around the house all the time.
Right. And, you know, I've been feeling a little bit the same way, too. Like, I'm feeling a little bit bored right now, or I was feeling bored. And every once in a while, I get the idea in my head that I want to go and do some volunteering somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And then I come to my senses. I could be more involved in my community. Sometimes I feel like I'd like to do that, but I get a sense that I get this pressure that I shouldn't do that because it's going to take me away from doing all the other boring things that I always do, which is nothing.
Now, you've always kind of felt like you're a little OCD. You think
yes.
That's part of it?
No, I just think I feel bad for leaving my husband behind.
Oh, I thought you meant like your chores or whatnot.
Yeah, no, I just think I would like to go out and do more, but then Mr. Anderson's going to have to stay home. He gives me all the power and authority in the world to go out and do whatever I want, but I always sort of feel, oh, really, I should be home with my husband because he's sitting there by himself, and I'm out here having fun, and he's at home doing nothing. So I feel I shouldn't do this thing I want to do,
mm-hmm.
right? Because he needs me, which is all self-imposed. He's not really contributing anything to make me feel that way, but I'm creating these ideas on my own, in my own head.
Mm. I think he might contribute a little bit. I saw his little pouty face. I've seen that pouty face like,
right.
Where are you going? Come here. I used to do that to Eric a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm like, whatever. Okay, see ya. Oh, you're home? Great. Fine. How does it make you feel that I want... I guess it's a strange little posse because nobody's in the same town with me, but does that make you feel a lot of pressure that I want you as part of... You know, I want you as my catcher on my baseball team?
It doesn't... I don't... No pressure. It doesn't... It makes me feel good. I feel happy to know that you'd like me on your team. That's a wonderful and generous thing to offer to somebody.
That
it's
sounded...
That kind of friendship.
Oh, it sounded very, very formal when you said that. That is a kind and generous thing that a person such as yourself might do for me.
Refer to Article 15.2 of the Best Friend Handbook.
I didn't get the copy, and I think somebody needs to get the notary quick.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry to sound so clinical.
You too.
I'm just trying to say, yes, that's great. I'd love to be on your team.
You crack me up whenever you tweet me, and you're like, be advised from this point on. We will be playing one game of words with friends. out.
You give me such a hard time when I, you know, this is not fair.
Because
I have to communicate in, as my profession is communicating clear and precise instructions.
Mm-hmm.
I get ragged on by you when I try to be, okay, I want you to know these items. This is what's occurring.
I know. But I'm so not that. You know, do you remember when Valley Girl song came out? Do you remember?
Yes.
That was.
I think so.
That was my childhood. And all of these posers that are pretending like they're Valley Girls now with their likes and their lilty voices and shit. It's like, I was doing that back in 1981 when that song came out. I don't know what your fucking problem is. So I'm not exactly talking in technical terms.
Right.
I just think it's funny. I'm not like giving you shit.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I don't know. Before we leave the subject, let's talk about something serious.
Okay.
Your cat, Princess.
Yeah, Princess the cat.
Princess the cat. Now, you theorize that she got killed by a coyote. I saw the coyotes that walked the streets of Vancouver. They are bold.
Yes.
And I can see that happening. When you said that, I thought you like lived up in the mountains, but I saw one on the streets. It's pretty ridiculous. So I can see where Princess probably did get killed like that. I mean,
but yeah, she didn't have a chance.
But you never felt much remorse for that.
Well, you know, Princess the cat wasn't the nicest cat to begin with.
I had cats like that.
And we had her for 14 years or so. So she laid her version of kitty cat terror onto us for a long time.
She pooped in your gym bag, I remember you said.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And she would attack you and jump out from under the table. And
I fucking, you know, hate that.
Still, she was a great cat, and I loved Princess, despite all of her, you know, little idiosyncrasies. You know, I was sad when she died, but we kind of couldn't wait, you know?
Oh. I know you chastised people on your podcast before they could even say anything. And I say, now listen here. This is a cat. And she's dead. And I don't want anybody talking to me, tweeting me, saying they're sorry about my dead cat. It's like, jeez Louise, sorry.
This is, like, I just think mourning for these kinds of things takes up so much energy and waste of time. Like, yeah, okay, it was a cat. It was an important part of our little family, but she's gone now. Like, it's over. The same thing happened with my mother. Yes, she was a wonderful woman. I love her. I miss her. I laugh and giggle about the things we did together. And, you know, she was a musician. She had all these wonderful qualities. And she was grumpy. And she was miserable. And she died too young. And she died an unpleasant death. And it was sad. And I miss her. But it just does not consume me. I'm not consumed by the fact that my mother or my cat passed away, because this is a fact of life. And mm-hmm. We've talked about this before. People come and go in and out of your life all the time. And I don't see the sense in mourning endlessly over the loss of somebody.
Mm-hmm. I feel like when somebody passes away, though, to me, it gives me the freedom. Now, keep in mind, the only people who have died that I've been close to have been grandparents, aunts, and uncles. I haven't lost either one of my parents or sibling.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that if my sister that I'm the closest with, if she died an early death, I could see where I would miss her a lot. Mm-hmm. But part of me, you know, when somebody dies, there is nothing you can do about it. If somebody lives across town and they've written you off, it feels like it doesn't have to be that way. And a person who might want to control other people, I don't know who that might be, but can I say, I'm going to admit something to you.
Yeah.
You know all these busy moms that I make fun of?
Yeah.
I want to be one of them. I want to be a woman that has total control over her household. I want, you know, maybe I don't want any kids, but, you know, the idea of a little kid coming up to me and saying, Mommy, can I do this? No, shut up. Go clean your room. I mean, I love that idea. Mm-hmm. I mean, I would love to be the master of my domain, but I'm not. And it's an endless source of frustration for me.
But what is preventing you from becoming the master?
Nobody will do what I tell them to do.
Well, that's a problem.
So I need some people to cooperate with me.
I see. Yeah. Maybe you just have to be more forceful. You got to stamp your foot.
Listen here, Faye. I don't care what you're doing. Get on Skype. We're recording right now.
I think you should also throw in there, do you know who I am? Try a couple of those.
Bitch, do you know who I am? Yes, I can make your life very difficult with my resources of barely above minimum wage. And can I ask you this question? You say that, you know, you loved your mom and everything, and you miss her. Do you ever try to find a replacement for her? In your friendships, you said she was miserable and unhappy.
Just the way I want people to remember my mother. She's miserable and unhappy. No, I don't believe I've ever tried to find a replacement for my mom. Mm-hmm. I don't know why that is.
Maybe she mothered you as much as you needed to be, you know?
She was definitely a positive force in my life, and she was a non-positive force, too. She created a lot of havoc in our lives, too. But not that I hold that against her, but...
You mean when she was divorced from your dad and she had those stupid boyfriends that were...
Yeah, and we were moving around all the time, and you know, there were some times when our lives were... pretty running on upset. So I don't hold any of that against her or blame her for it. I actually got a lot of positive things came out of the kind of the wacky life that we lived sometimes. I always enjoyed my mother. And I have great respect for her, and I give her credit for making me into the person that I am today. She's very important to me, so I don't think anyone could ever replace her, but I'm not looking for, I don't need a replacement. She mothered me for the time that she had care and control of me, and then at a point she kicked me out or else I left. I'm not sure who did what there. And
you said that she was going to move again, and you said, no, I'm done moving, and then you stayed with your brother.
Yeah, it was my dad who did that.
Oh, it was your dad? Okay, sorry.
Yeah. I left the nest for a while, and then my mom and I came back together, and we lived together again as roommates, more so than mother and son. So I knew my mom in many different ways, not only as a mother, but also as a friend and a confidant and a drinking buddy. She was many things to me. Everything I remember about my mom when I think of her are all the positive things. And this is why I think I don't feel a need to mourn her, because I have many fond memories of my mother. And, you know, when I think of her, I am happy.
Mm-hmm. And you never doubted that she loved you?
Not at all. No, not in any way. And nor do I think any of my family members don't love me. I know my brothers do, even though we don't have a very good relationship, and that we're not on really good terms, possibly. But I don't ever feel as though I'm unloved, or that I couldn't count on them if I needed them for something.
Mm-hmm. Where do you think your tendency to not trust people comes from, then?
Just from a long, young, like when I was a kid, we were always moving and rolling, and I was always fighting the kids, not really fighting, you know, having to go to to new schools all the time and deal with people who didn't want you to be there, or you were always the new kid. And some of the people my mom knew were suspect.
Yeah.
I learned early to be wary of people. Mm-hmm. Not to mistrust them so much, but just to keep your eye on everybody.
Right. I've seen that look. I haven't seen it for a while, but Pride 48, I saw that look. You're just really taking everybody in and sizing everybody up. And
right.
I can remember you were sitting in front of me in the recording studio at Pride 48, and you had your more of your faux hawk back then.
Right.
And I can remember just your hair was perfect, and I was sitting behind you, and I touched your hair, and you flipped around so quick. The nastiest look on your face. And you didn't say it, but you might have said, like, don't fucking touch my hair. I was like, oh, all right. Don't touch his hair. Oh, dear.
Oh, my God.
What?
Never touch a gay man's poofed up hair.
Yes, my goodness. His coiffure could not be messed with. Well, it's funny because the way you dress is not real prissy or, you know, like, you don't dress any better than I do.
Thanks, Brenda.
You're welcome. I mean, you have a very casual style, unless you're holding back this big wardrobe I've never seen.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But so I didn't really think that touching your hair was going to be such a big deal. Yeah. Oh, dear.
I guess maybe we should move it along.
Move it along. I wanted to present these scenarios to you. Maybe we can take a look through my kaleidoscope.
Okie dokie. What are you looking through the keyhole?
One person's craziness is another person's reality.
Hey, come out from under that table.
Look at it from my point of view.
Just step back and take a look from my perspective.
Humans see what they want to see.
Just step back and take another look.
It's all in the mind.
Listen here, Missy.
Take a look through my kaleidoscope.
A look through my kaleidoscope.
Okay, Faye, I would like you to consider this from your perspective.
Okay.
We've talked about going to parties and whatnot, right?
We have, yes.
And
how much you love them.
I do love I love to talk to people. Just get up, right up in their shit, and just hug them and kiss them and love them up. I do.
Mm-hmm.
So, I feel like men come into a room and feel like they want to dominate the situation. They want to proverbially. Thank you. Take their penis out and just piss all over the room and say, this is mine. I'm king of the castle in here. And I think women do that too in a way because they want to come in and be the belle of the ball. But I also think women look at coming into a party and want to assimilate into the group. Do you have any thoughts on this theory?
Well, I don't disagree. I'll give you the man's perspective.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to preface all of this by this does not apply to every situation. I mean, I don't want to stereotype us into anything. But anyway, this is what I think can occur for men. I agree that there's a certain amount of one-upmanship that occurs where man to man, men are in a constant battle. And I'm mostly speaking about straight men here. They're in a constant battle of one-upmanship where they're fighting always to have or exert some kind of power or control. And I think you see that at parties where they talk about their trucks or the golf or... There's always some sort of discussion where they're trying to prove how magnificent they are.
You don't see that in the gay community? Don't you think it just probably exhibits itself in a different way?
Yeah, I think gay men are less boisterous about that. They're a bit more subtle. I think gay men are too into themselves to worry about what other men think about them.
Really?
You know what I mean? Like, you have all these sort of stereotypical gay men. There's the twinks and the bears and the tops and the bottom and the leather men. You know, there's a stereotype for every type of gay man that's out there. And I think they're too much into their own stereotype to care or be interested in anybody who's not exactly like them. That's kind of what my interpretation of gay men is.
Hmm.
If you're not into fuzzy bear men, then I'm not interested in you.
What would you classify yourself as? Do you have a title for you? I wouldn't know what to say.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm sure there's a bunch of listeners out there that are saying, you're a fucking queen or something. I don't know. I don't know how to categorize myself. I'm too weird to fit into any one of those categories.
Mm-hmm. I had said this to you before, and it never got brought up. And maybe this would be a good time to interject this thought. But sometimes I feel like when I'm observing Twitter conversations that everybody's so damn flirty. And everybody says, you know, the most plainest guy, they'll be like, oh, he's hot. And I always think, the criteria for somebody to be hot sometimes seems very low in the gay community. Have you ever felt like that? In dealing with straight men, all the straight men think that no matter what they look like, they should be able to get a model, you know? They think
right.
That they never have any realistic expectation of what they should get. But it seems like to me, you know, you guys will be fawning over somebody and I'll click on the picture or something. I'm like, nah. Yeah, he's a guy. He seems to be a man. What's so exceptional about him? But then you and I have different tastes. Like, I'll say I think somebody's cute. And usually when I see somebody's think somebody's cute, it's because there's something quirky about their smile or their face or their eyes, you know. It's not like just a typical beautiful man and you're like always like, I don't see it.
Yeah. It's too subjective, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I think every person has a different idea. I have extremely high standards. I think a man needs to be exceptionally good looking before I'll be interested in him. But then I can be taken by simple things about a man, like their eyes. If they have nice eyes, then mm-hmm. everything else about them melts away.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. I think attraction is just too subjective.
I'll give you that. So, what I was trying to get at initially bringing this subject up.
Right.
And it was kind of directed towards what we were talking about earlier, is that I feel like there's something inside of us, much like sexuality, something that's undefinable, that there's something in us that tells us that we need to belong to a group, because in nature, you don't just see lone tigers running around, you know. They're always part of a group, you know. You see a flock of birds. It's the ones that are straggling on behind that end up dying because they don't have anybody.
Right.
So I feel like that's part of, there's just something in me that wants to be part of a group. And when you say things to me such as, people come and go, there's nothing you can do about it, it doesn't change it, oops, sorry, change anything. I'm doing a lot of hand expressions here. That just seems to me so counterintuitive than what should come naturally to me. Because to me, I need to be part of something bigger than myself. And I'm so isolated every day. It feels so unnatural. My day-to-day life feels like so beyond unhealthy.
Mm.
And so when I talk to you, this is the most I've talked all day.
Oh.
My first client, there was nobody there. I went to the swimming pool. I didn't talk to anybody. I went to my second job. They were there, but I talked just a little bit. I came home. I went for a walk. Eric wasn't home. I sat around by myself. He came home. He turned on the TV. I mean, this is the most my mouth has moved all day long.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels like when I get wound up, it's because it's like a starving person, you know. I've only had this little tiny quarter of a sandwich, and I see this big sandwich over there, and I can't get to it, you know.
Right. Well, I agree in many respects about our desire to belong in a group. I think that's absolutely valid, because I think even though you think you're not in a group, I think we gravitate towards them. Just take Pride 48, for instance. It's a perfect example of a bunch of individuals searching to be recognized or to be brought in to the fold together, to find like-minded people where we can all congregate together.
Mm-hmm.
And even though I say whatever I said about leave me the hell alone or whatever you said, I said, even though I say that people come and go and I don't need anybody, that's not completely true. I do absolutely need people in my life. But I think it's okay for that group to change, to ebb and flow, for people to come in and out of that group. But absolutely, I agree. I think even Mr. Independent Faye Driver needs some sort of recognition of and support from a group of some kind.
Mm-hmm.
Like right now, that's you. Tomorrow morning when I go to work, it'll be a bunch of guys at work.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes I feel like, you never watched Seinfeld.
Yes, I did. I know Seinfeld. I just don't have every episode memorized.
There's this episode where George likes this girl, and she really doesn't want anything to do with him. And she leaves he leaves a hat behind so that he can come back, you know. But mm-hmm. she's on to him, and he's like, well, you know, at first you meet me, and you're kind of like, oh, I don't know. But then before you know it, it's kind of like a jingle for a song, like, and he was like saying, Costanza. Like, all of a sudden, you don't realize it, and then you're going, Costanza. I feel like that's me just kind of coming into people's lives, like, hi, here I am. I know I'm a little irritating, but you'll get used to me soon enough. Hi, I'm back. Oh, am I your Costanza?
You're the jingle in my head. There's no doubt about it.
Ding. Well, Faye, we should probably bring our show to an end.
Yes.
Is Kashella got anything cooked up for us?
Gashella does, in fact. She's going to make for us a lovely... It's a Russian beef stew recipe she's working on, I believe.
And is that Laundromat King of Tanopa? Is he there, too?
Well, he's been helping her out. There's no doubt about it.
He's kind of a... He's a bad husband.
No, well, I think you'll find he's done something nice for his wife this time.
Oh, good.
But let's not spoil the surprise. Let's let Gashella tell us.
Okay.
Gashella tell us.
Mm-hmm. Sure. So, before we say goodbye, we always have to let everybody know the weather. Because, you know, like every good morning show, every 5 seconds, they're telling the time and the weather. So, mm-hmm. it's 9:55 p.m. here in Iowa. And it's 55 degrees.
Nevada.
Oh, my goodness. I have so many radio gigs, I get confused.
Yeah.
But I look out the studio here at the Jim Butler ballroom at the Mitzvah Hotel, and I can see that it's partly clouded, and it's 55 degrees Fahrenheit. I don't know what that makes it, Celsius. Do
you
know?
Neither do I. It's like 10.
So
10 or 12.
Comfortable. You might need a jacket.
Right. And just in case you want to tell us what the weather is in your neck of the woods, people, you can call us at 319-535-0266. That's 319-535-0BOO. Mm-hmm. Or you can email us as well. We'd love to get an email from you. You can send your message to fayandbrenda@gmail.com.
And Ranger John sent us an email concerning our tomato episode. And he said I was right, I think is what he boiled down
I
to.
I think he said I was right, actually.
I don't think that's...
Well, come on. He also spoke of Freud and cigars. And
Faye's always interested in a good cigar. Well, say
all right,
say
folks.
Goodbye, Faye.
Goodbye, Faye.
Goodbye, Faye.
I hate that joke. Goodbye, Brenda.
Goodbye, Faye.
Frenzy, and you are listening to Cooking with Gash. So, darlings, I know Cooking with Gash have been gone a long time. Well, you know, sometimes problems happen. To know the health department say, oh, no cooking in back of laundromat kitchen. This is a kitchen not a certified. So husband help with a legal problem, and now more Cooking with Gisela now come to you today on KFAB Radio. So today, darlings, on Cooking with Gash, we make a wonderful dish, beef stroking off. Now, darlings, as you know, before cooking, try to get a beverage. So today, beverage, very simple. We just have a little bit of gin in a glass with ice cube. Here's the ice cube in the glass with the gin. Oh, pardon me. Gisela open a lovely tonic water. Put in a tonic water, a gin, and a lovely, a generous helping lime wedge. Squishy, squishy lime wedge into glass. And now, Gisela has a gin and tonic for which to make with you beef stroking off. One moment, darling, while Gisela samba drink. Gin and tonic, oh, delicious. Oh, yes, very nice. Oh, that is very nice. Maybe a little bit more gin. Oh, there we are. Yum, yum. Ah, delicious. Try one more time here. Oh, delightful. Oh, yes, it is. Very, very nice. Yes. Now, darlings, getting to beef stroking off recipe. Now, the ingredients very important for you to have. 2 pounds of beef chuck roast. Now, Gisela recipe, this beef stroking off come from Russia, originally 19th century. Not my country, Russia. No, this come from close by to where Gisela grew up, but Russia not home country. So today, we're going to explore a different culture and learn about beef stroking off with Russian beef. So, typically, in the 1900th century, beef used to be cut in cube, but today, Gisela used strip beef. Beef strip, not a beef cube. We're not making a roast. Beef stroking off should be very tender strip of beef. So, darlings, you need 2 pounds of beef. You cut into strip. Okay, very good. We use a little bit of salt, a little bit of pepper. We're going to need some butter. We need a green onion sliced. We're going to need some papaya. Papaya, I said already. Maybe I shall need a little bit to drink here. Just a little bit confused. Now, where was I? The green onion, all-purpose flour, some beef broth. You need some mustard, like a French mustard. A little bit of mushrooms, some sour cream, a little bit of white wine, and then, as I said before, salt and pepper. So, what shall I make for you now? We prepare the ingredient, and Gisela come right back after the ingredient prepared. Okay, darling. So, darling, recipe, maybe not call for the garlic, but Gisela put garlic and ginger in every dish just to make just a little bit better. So, darlings, I'm cutting for you, splicing and dicing a little bit of garlic, a little bit ginger to add to the recipe just to make it a little bit nicer, even though I know recipe not called for garlic. But, darlings, garlic make life delicious for everybody. Just like a gin and tonic make life delicious, make life a little bit easier. Numb the feelings so you don't have to worry about all the life that goes on around you. Now, before we continue with the cooking, Gisela just need one more little bit to drink with the gin, a little bit of ice in the glass, a little bit of gin. Oh, gin, my darling, you must keep your gin in the freezer with the ice. Gin must be very, very cold. Okay, so a little bit gin, a little bit ice. Gisela, get the tonic water. Oh, just very nice, very nice. Pour into glass. Put tonic water in the fridge. And here, find a lemon or lime. Lime preferred. Lemon is okay if you know lime, but lime is much better. Squeeze in the lime. Oh, there we are, darling. Oh, maybe just a little bit more gin. There we go, darling. Delicious. Mm. Oh, gin and tonic. Oh, delicious. Oh, very nice. Very nice. Okay, darlings, now. Gisela make for you. Get the pan. Oh, darling. So, darlings. We place the pan on the oven. This is a very special pan given by a very special friend. There we are. Very nice. Very nice. Make a pan hot. Oh, turn on the heat. Darlings, get a little bit of olive oil. Okay, darlings, now we have all the ingredients prepared. The beef roast is cut into strips. Just lovely little thin strips. A little bit salt, a little bit pepper. Make sure you have on hand the butter. Some green onions. Some all-purpose flour. A little bit of beef broth. Some mustard. Mushroom, all sliced very nice. Some very, very nice slice of mushroom. For later on, we need some sour cream, a little bit of white wine, and then the salt and the pepper. Okay, darling, so pan heated up. So now, for beef stroking off, we take 2 pounds of beef and chuck it out. Now, Gisela not have any beef, and not able to afford the beef for today's show, so we substitute today beef stroking off with the chicken. So a little bit chicken. Just throwing into the pan, we have a little bit of olive oil in the pan, and then we throw in a little bit of chicken there. Fast move, keep fast moving the chicken. People don't want the chicken to stay in one place. Now, you know, Priscilla always likes to have garlic and ginger. So ginger and garlic go into the pan. Nice to hot with the olive oil. With the chicken and garlic. Smells delicious, Sammy. Smells delicious. Keep it moving. Don't let anything sit too long in the pan. You keep moving very quickly. Now, for beef stroganoff, we usually put in a little bit of green onion. Saute the green onion. Cassandra don't have a green onion. Today we use a white onion. Diced very nicely in the pan. So beef stroganoff, you put in the beef. Today we use the chicken. A little bit of garlic, a little bit ginger, a little bit of onion, a little bit of celery, a little bit of chicken. Just keep on moving the saute, saute, saute. Colors are beautiful. Saute all the delicious ingredients for beef stroganoff. There we go, darling. It also looks delicious. Smells delicious. So we let the little flavor of melt. Add a little bit of pepper. Ground pepper. Oh, that also lovely. Delicious, delicious. A little bit of salt. Add a little bit of salt. Oh, darlings, my salt. No salt available today. Where's the salt? Pepper and shaker. Oh, that's not a good. Oh, darlings. Oh, darlings. Here we are. We have salt. Grind a little bit of salt. Now, darlings, for your beef stroganoff, you take the juice from the cooking of the beef. And you take the flour for today. We use 4 tablespoons of flour. Now today, since we don't have a beef, we just have a chicken, we skip this step. Darlings, we just carry on. We let the green pepper saute, celery saute, onion saute. There's just a slight different variation on the beef stroganoff. And then now gashella. Just add a little bit of cumin into a little bit of cumin. Oh, delightful. Oh, so smell delicious. Oh, lovely. Oh, smell delicious. A little bit of cumin in with the onion. And also a little bit of curry. Just a slight variation. Beef is stroking off with gashella, special flavoring. Just make it a little bit more delicious. Darling, smell! You hear the sizzling. Oh, just smell delicious. Cumin, coriander, little bit of curry. Oh, this beef is stroking off. Be delicious. Just be delicious. Okay, darlings. Now, normally with a beef is stroking off, you will stir in some flour into the juices, make a lovely little roux. And then a little bit of beef broth. Put in the beef broth in with the roux. Make a very nice gravy. And then your beef, which you cooked earlier. Saute the beef in the beef broth for about 1 hour. Nice low heat. But today, Cassandra make a little bit substitution. No beef available. No beef broth available. Today we add a little bit of beans. A little bit pinto bean. Oh, gosh, I need a little bit of spoon. Okay, darlings, we just add a little bit of pinto bean into mixture. Oh, smells delicious, darlings. Stir, darling. So keep it moving. It's very important. Keep it moving. Always want to keep it moving. Okay, darling, a little bit of pinto beans. Casello, add into mixture a little bit of black beans. Pinto beans and black beans. A little bit celery. A little bit red pepper. A little bit green pepper. A little bit onion. Oh, delicious. Keep it moving, darling. Keep it stirring. Keep it stirring. Oh, darlings. We need a smell-o-vision. No, darlings. We need a smell-o-radio. So you smell how delicious Cashella make a dish for you. Beef is stroking off. Just delicious. A little bit of cumin. A little bit of curry. A little bit of beans. Onions, oh, so just a delicious. This is a Casella Firenze version of Beef Stroganoff. I make for you. You enjoy in your own home. For Casella, we put into a little bit burrito. Cover with burrito. Oh, darling, sorry. Casella lose her balance because she maybe have too much, a little bit too much. Beverage. So, darlings, Casella Firenze finish, saute, beef stroking off, little bit beans, little bit onion, little bit of ginger, garlic, cumin, coriander, very special version of Casella beef stroking off. We put into burrito, add a little bit of sour cream, a little bit of salsa, it's delicious. I am a Casella Firenze. You have been listening to Cooking with Gash. Bye-bye, darlings.